WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I always like to be surprised by an actor, and David Morris has surprised me a lot lately. I first knew him in his role on St. Elsewhere, the popular TV hospital series of the 80s. Morris played Dr. Jack Boomer Morrison. His character was young, sensitive, constantly wounded by life. Boomer's first wife was killed, his young son was kidnapped, and Boomer was raped by inmates of a prison where he was performing community service. Lately, Morse is not so sensitive. In the film The Crossing Guard, directed by Sean Penn, he played a pumped-up ex-con who did time for killing a young girl in a hit-and-run accident while driving drunk. Her father was played by Jack Nicholson. In 12 Monkeys, Morse played a devious character willing to wreak havoc on the Earth. And in June, he'll co-star with Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery in the prison action film The Rock, set in Alcatraz. It's not just Morse's image that's changed, so has the place he calls home. He told me why he fled L.A. and moved to the East Coast.
Well, I'd grown up on the East Coast. My wife had grown up on the East Coast. And the earthquake brought us here in a hurry. We'd talked about it for a long time. We'd been in Los Angeles for about 12 years. And on the morning of the earthquake, we lost our house, and it was time to leave.
What happened to your house?
Well, the whole foundation was gone. We were on a hillside, and the hillside started to go, and we just couldn't go back to it. Actually, it was still standing, but it was completely, you know, a wreck inside, and it has to be torn down.
Could you describe what you heard and saw the night of the earthquake?
Well, I was asleep, and I heard it coming in my sleep. We lived on the valley side, and I'd heard them coming before. And truly, it's a terrifying sound. And hearing this thing come across the valley, I was literally out of my bed before I was awake, thinking, I've got to get the kids. And I hit the floor as the earthquake hit the house. And I was thrown to the floor and couldn't get up. And I was just thinking, I've killed my children. We've killed our children. And we've stayed here too long. All I can think is how stupid we were. And finally got to we have twins, and I got to one of them, and I remember my daughter was sleeping in the bedroom where I was. My wife was underneath the house in the guest room, and we had a housekeeper who was with us, and I was yelling at her to get a child. And the earthquake is still going on, and the kids are covered in plaster, and it was just a scary event.
The kids must have been terrified.
They actually slept through the whole thing.
They did?
Yeah, except for one. The one I didn't grab, of course, was the one who was awake. And he was the one who remembers it all.
How old is he?
He's four now, but he was two then.
Was he pretty scared by the whole thing?
Yeah, really scared. And that thing that he really remembered is when we didn't know what happened to Susan, because she had to go outside of the house to get into the house, and we were sitting up there. Every window in the house had blown open, and doors, and the alarm was going off, and it's one of those talking alarms, and this window is open and that door is open, and there's this futuristic scary thing, and every buzzer in the house was happening. We didn't know where Susan was, and finally we heard her voice at the front door yelling up to us, and the house was filling up with gas. I could smell the gas going all through the house because the gas line had broken. So we started yelling to each other back and forth about the gas. We got to do something about the gas. And Benjamin remembers that, and he has the image of, I don't know how where it came from, but the explosion, fire. And that's what was probably the scariest part for him.
Did the house actually explode?
No. But he made the connection with gas and fire.
So would you do run outside of the house eventually and just stand and watch for a while?
Well, we didn't know what to do. We'd always heard stay inside. There were aftershocks. And we were all sick. Benjamin had pneumonia. We all were on antibiotics. And we had one of those houses with all the heavy Spanish tile roof. And Susan had kind of run through this falling tile to get back. And I didn't want to take the kids outside and have to worry about things falling off the roof and not know where to go once we got out there. So we stayed you know, in doorways for a while we kind of collected blankets and water and our antibiotics and that stuff, and watched literally down from the hill from us, the block was burning down below us, so we could look out the windows and see the fires, and it seemed like the end of the world.
Did you try to save certain prized possessions besides the antibiotics?
Well, people always say to take the pictures. And right then, all we could think of was that the house was standing, and once the sun started coming up, we got everybody in the car and covered them in blankets and stayed there, and finally borrowed a cellular phone from somebody and was able to get to people on the other side of Los Angeles, friends, and realized their place is okay, and got out, and we lived with them for a week.
Well, I could see how this would encourage you to leave the city. So were you in the middle of making a movie during the earthquake?
We were just starting The Crossing Guard, literally. We had done one day of shooting.
Didn't Sean Penn, who directed that, lose his house?
And he had just lost his house. No, he lost it in the fire.
Oh, he lost it in a fire.
Right, and he had just lost that, whatever it was, 6 months before.
Wow, so the director and one of the leads, both out of homes.
Mm.
So did he want to keep going?
Of course. It was the first, actually the first film up and shooting after the earthquake.
So how soon after you lost your home were you on the set?
2 days later. Or the day later, the next morning, actually.
Boy, you know, you never know what's going through somebody's mind when they're making a movie. Mm-hmm. I saw you in The Crossing Guard, and I thought, gee, what a really life-changing performance this is, because I'd never seen you in that kind of role before, where you misunderstand the character's motives in the beginning and think that the character's really a bad guy and a real tough guy. And as the film goes on, you see that he's really kind of much more sensitive than that. But, you know, you'd physically transformed yourself for the role.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, hey, lucky guy, you know, good break. And while you were making the movie, it must have been horrible.
Well, yeah. I mean, our life certainly was, you know.
In turmoil.
And really in turmoil.
Yeah. Now, you did transform yourself for The Crossing Guard, or at least you looked really different to me. You put on a lot of muscle.
A lot of weight, yeah.
Was part of it just weight and part of it muscle, too?
It was a lot of food and a lot of working out. It was a lot of, a lot of muscle. Sean and I, one of the nice things about working with Sean is he I've done two films with him now, and he has really included me in the whole process of the character and developing the script and, you know, talking about the script and all of that. And it's really been two of the greatest acting experiences of my life. And I'd known about this character for a long time. Actually, right after we finished The Indian Runner, he showed me just a scene. It was a scene where Jack's character and my character get together for the first time. And he asked me what I thought, and I said, this is a great scene. And out of that came, you know, eventually came a script. So I'd been involved for a long time. And we had talked about this character in so many different ways. And finally, we just came to, it's a man who has survived 6 years in prison, and you don't survive it for no reason. He was transformed by prison in a lot of ways. And part of that is you got nothing to do but eat bad food and work out. So that's essentially what I did for 3 months.
Let me get back to your physical transformation for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Did it change your personality for a while as your body started to change? Did you carry yourself differently or feel different?
Oh, really different. Feel really different. Yeah. And And not just because of the size of my body, but also, the facial hair and what we had done. I'd straightened my hair and darkened it. We'd done all that, and we're playing with all of that. And it's a very different impression when you walk into a room and you're that size and you're that, and you stand next to people. It's not what, first of all, people are familiar with me from St. Elsewhere and other work I've done.
Where you were a very sensitive guy, not a physically threatening character.
Right. And there's obviously obvious surprise of people not expecting who they expect to see when I walk into the room, but also what I look like. And there's something actually kind of powerful about that. I kind of liked it.
Yeah. So what kind of reactions would you get to your imposing physical presence?
Being outright startled. Actually, one of the first houses when my wife came back east, she was hopping around from house to house, and I got to visit them from a weekend, and the person that they were staying in the house had never met me before. And I had spent the night, woke up in the morning. He came home and walked around the corner and saw me in the doorway and thought he was being robbed, and thought he was in physical danger. And I could just see it all over him. He didn't know whether to bolt from the house or what.
And you liked it.
I did like it.
Now, you worked with Jack Nicholson in The Crossing Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And were you at all uncomfortable about sharing scenes with him, afraid that he'd be like such a strong presence that it would be hard to hold your own?
No, I don't think I don't really have that concern. And also, Jack doesn't let you have that. I had met him before we started shooting. And he doesn't let you have that feeling just in relationship in person with him. And he doesn't let you have that feeling on the set. He doesn't let anybody have that feeling. He doesn't let the crew have that feeling. You always have the awareness that he's a superstar, and you can tell that he enjoys that. But he's very human, and he's really there to make the best film he can make and make the best scene he can make.
No, you strike me as very different from Sean Penn. Sean Penn has a reputation of being a very combustible kind of character, and you seem like a very reserved, quiet person, probably someone who, I don't know if I should say you wouldn't be easily rattled. I have no idea if you'd be easily rattled or not, but you probably wouldn't blow up or...
Oh, it takes me a long time to blow up, and when I do, it's pretty major. I just hold on to things for a long time.
Right.
I think that's maybe part of the fun with working with Sean, is he actually encourages certain qualities in me that other people don't.
Which qualities?
Well, taking this character, going to new places with this character, that a lot of times when I get a job, people hire me because of exactly who I am. I may be interested in doing something different with the character, but that's not what they're interested in. And that can be very discouraging, because that's a lot of what I find interesting in acting, is taking myself to emotional, mostly new places, physically new places, whatever it is. And Sean, as an actor, does that. And as a director, he enjoys that and brings that out.
What made him think that if you, ate and exercised for quite a while, that you could transform yourself in such a way as to be perfect for this character who had spent 6 years in prison after killing Nicholson's son in a car accident?
I don't know. I think
daughter.
He's been through it himself. And things
in
like
transforming
close
range, himself. Yeah.
And I think he's aware of what it did to himself when he went through that process.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously goes to extremes, and he knows what that will bring out. And an actor.
My guest is David Morris. He starred in The Crossing Guard, and this June he opens in the action film The Rock. In the 80s, he played Dr. Jack Boomer Morrison on St. Elsewhere. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with actor David Morris. If somebody doesn't know you, especially like before you had a real track record, if you show up for an audition and you walked in as yourself, kind of quiet, reserved guy, small voice.
Right.
Would they think that you had it in you to be something different from that?
Of course not. No. And I've had to fight that for a long time. That was one of the problems with doing St. Elsewhere, is people thought they knew who I was. They thought they knew what I could do. And I was defined by that role for a long time.
Yeah, and that role was, sensitive doctor, sensitive husband, sensitive widower, sensitive new husband. And, but you were always very reserved and sensitive.
Mm-hmm. And not always very interested in doing that, but that was, that was the role and that was my job to do, and I, did as best I could.
What did you think the best and worst parts of being in a weekly series for 6 years were?
Well, this series in particular, I think it was probably one of the most extraordinary series that's been on television. I don't think I'm, you know, alone in feeling that way. So to be a part of something like that was great. But I think I'll, in some ways, it was hard because it's like looking at a family that looks really good from the outside, but nobody sees the dysfunctional part inside. And you don't really want to talk about the dysfunctional part. You don't want to betray everybody by what's, you know, what's going on. So you kind of, you know, keep the good face and keep, you know, all of that. And meantime, that, you know, it has its own set of problems within.
What did you do when the series ended? What was like your first move after that to try to establish a new acting life?
I don't. I was actually offered a quite a number of series after St. Elsewhere went off the air, which I just think was normal for a lot of people when they go off a series. And I felt so cemented in television at that point. It's pretty much all I'd done for whatever it was, 7 years at that point. And I knew that I wanted to be able to do some films, and I wanted to be able to do theater. And I knew if I just kept doing series, I would never get out of it. And there are very good things about doing a series, but there are also the drawbacks of being locked into that character. And also locked into people thinking you're a television actor. And it's not what I valued about my work and my identity. So I needed to make that break. And I pretty much was willing to do whatever role I could get in a certain way in film.
What kind of roles did you get after St. Elsewhere?
Well, the first film I did after St. Elsewhere was a film called Desperate Hours with Mickey Rourke and Anthony Hopkins, who hadn't done a film in quite a while in this country. And he was great to work. He was so grateful to be working in film. He loves films. So I did a role in that, which is pretty wild character. And I actually got Indian Runner right after that. Sean saw Desperate Hours, and he remembered me from a film. The very first film I did was called Inside Moves. And he asked me to come in. I didn't know him. And I knew his father, Leo, who had directed on St. Elsewhere, and his brother, Michael, who had done background work on St. Elsewhere. And he asked me if I'd just come in and talk to him about Indian Runner. And he, for some reason, got it in his head that I should be the guy in it, even though everybody said that all these huge stars should be doing the role. And he said, no, this is the guy who should be doing it. And he fought for me all the way down the line.
Wow, that's probably a rare thing.
Really a rare thing.
That's very nice. Yeah. What's it like for you to live in a regular East Coast city as opposed to in the capital of the entertainment business where, you know, people are running into actors and actresses and directors pretty regularly?
Right. Well, your whole life, everything is about work there. Everything is about career. Every relationship, every time you go to dinner, every automobile you buy, everything, every decision you make seems to revolve around the business, your work you do. And I just felt dead in a lot of ways. I had enjoyed doing a lot of things before I went out there. And a lot of those things just didn't happen. And when I came back here, I felt this whole thing lifted off of me, and I felt much more creative and open. I just feel much better about myself back here.
You know, we talked about how for so long you're image as an actor was, as you know, a kind of sensitive, introspective guy, and how you've really changed that. I mean, in fact, your next movie is an action film,
right?
The Rock, which is it's not exactly Escape from Alcatraz. I mean, Alcatraz. I've seen the trailers a half dozen times already. Alcatraz, right?
Yeah, it is. I've already done an Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, you already seen that one?
So my second time out there. Yeah, this one is they're trying to get into Alcatraz.
Right, because what's the premise? Alcatraz is already a state park, and they want to like hold it hostage or something.
Yeah. It's a group of Marines who have taken over the island, and they're kind of holding San Francisco hostage, and they need to find somebody who can get back onto the island. And the only person who's ever escaped from it, who nobody wants to admit has ever escaped, they track him down, and that's Sean Connery, and he's the guy who's going to get him back in there.
What I imagine is nice for somebody like you doing an action film is, A, you could probably really have a sense of irony about it when you need to, and B, it's too late for you to worry about getting typecast as an action star. I mean, you already have a whole career behind you, so right. So you can do it without worrying about getting stuck in that for the rest of your life,
yeah.
And then outgrowing it.
Right. Well, I think the only thing I have to worry about at the moment is I'm afraid I'm to have done kind of a series of bad guys. And I kind of got locked into the nice guy for so long, and I'm afraid now I'm going to get locked into the bad guy. It seems very easy for people to get a certain idea about you in their heads, and that's the only thing I'm really concerned about.
Okay. So what else are you coming out in that we should watch for?
Another action film, which is called The Long Kiss Goodnight, which Rennie Harlan is directing with Gina Davis and Sam Jackson.
Bad guy.
And a film called Extreme Measures that Michael Apted is directing, and Hugh Grant and Elizabeth Hurley are producing. Bad guy. And that one, too.
People react to you differently when you play the bad guy than when you play the sensitivo?
Well, there's a lot of people. A lot of my mother's friends who want me to be the good guy. They all miss me being a good guy. And my mother does, too, I think. But I don't know if people on the street react very differently.
David Morse, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Actor David Morse, his next film, The Rock, opens in June. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.